Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Leslie.
And I'm Tessie.
And we are sisters-in-law. We started this podcast because we enjoy having great conversation about ourselves as mothers, but also ourselves as women. So that's what we do here. We dissect the mother self and the other self, and we do it by talking to our friends and to their friends and to new friends as well. We interview women on Mondays just to get a feel for how they do the incredible things they do. On the outside, it may not look so incredible, but every one of us has a mama bear inside that really is shaking up the world. So we're glad that you're here today. We have a great interview, and we hope that you will enjoy your time with us.
Yeah, today on the podcast, we welcome Kathy Engstrom. She's a mom like so many of us, right, who are having to wrangle your mama bear for causes inside the home. Kathy is a mom to three, and in the interview, she talks about the way she's had to go from this kind of introverted people pleaser to a mom who is a fierce advocate for her kids.
Right. If you're new to the podcast, before each interview, Tessie and I like to do a little bit of a brief conversation on the things that we pulled from the interview with our guests and how we are going to apply them to our lives. We believe that if you're open to it, life is a constant lesson in learning and growing, and our guests bring such unique perspectives to the table that we often, actually always, find little nuggets of truth that can be easily applied to our lives as well.
Yeah, we want this podcast not to just be a conversation that's enjoyable for you to listen to, but also one that really does challenge you and inspire you. So often we have just an hour at the most with each guest. Sometimes we just aren't able to explore certain themes due to those kind of time constraints. When that happens, this introduction ends up being the place we're able to dive a bit deeper into those topics.
Yeah, Kathy is no exception. I felt like it was just an hour of me learning what so many moms in the world are going through. Mm-hmm. She talks about what it was like when she realized her oldest son, Carver, had dyslexia, and fills us in on how she went about championing his education. I thought that was, in and of itself, incredible. But then she got really vulnerable with us about the walk that her family is currently taking with their daughter, Lily, as they navigate the complexities of mental health.
I know. I mean, she's a good friend of mine. We talk about it on the podcast, but I still felt like I was learning the entire time. And I also felt like there are just so many great takeaways from our conversation with Kathy. But the one I think the majority of our mama bears can relate to is simply this, okay? If your child is quote unquote normal, and that's kind of a heavy, heavy thing, right? If they're normal in school or in public, and again, we say that with like, obviously knowing that that is totally subjective, then maybe the best thing we can do as mama bears, or the way we can kind of harness our mama bear for the benefit of everyone, is to not put pressure on teachers to spend time on our kids when the teacher's time is better spent on kids who need the extra attention and help. So if your kid is doing the best they can and is one of the top performers in class, it might be time to take a deep breath and back off the teacher if your first inclination is to call, write, or march in there demanding that A+.
Yeah, absolutely. We talk about this a lot on the podcast, just about the difference between ego and the actual mama bear that's within us all. Yeah. And we also encourage ourselves, each other, you know, our listeners, to use that mama bear to cover not just their own kids, but everyone. Because these moms of kiddos who need the extra bit of help, like Kathy, are fighting really hard for their kids to be seen and not slip through the cracks, we can play a part in helping those kids and those other mama bears. It's an actual need. Sometimes it seems, though, like we get a little bit huffy for something that isn't a need at all, but that could be better described as just a want or a desire to be perceived in a certain way. So, listeners, this might take some extra work to sometimes suppress our more selfish tendencies so that we can actually extend this life of love and compassion to others. our teachers and other staff members in the school, they have a finite amount of time that they can use in the classroom. And let's be honest, they work all the time outside of the classroom as well. So can we all just agree that the kids who deserve the bulk of that time are really the ones who need it the most?
Yes. And you know, Leslie, as a mom to kids who literally run the gamut of that entire scope, right? I have the like uber kind of self-reliant kid, and then I have the kid on IEP and everything in between. I can tell you that, like, seriously, you guys, take a chill for the higher achieving ones so that my baby with the IEP can get what the help that they need, right?
Tessie, out of your millions and millions of children.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
There's five. I mean, there is a big in between when you talk about having two extremes. Yes. There are also many in between. But just for new listeners, you don't have like thousands or millions.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I kind of do because I include all my nieces and nephews. No, but I mean, obviously, Leslie, you and I are not saying if your kid is naturally gifted in school to just sit back and not make sure kind of all the parties are doing what they need to do for your child. We're just saying to make sure you remember that there are other stories at play in the world and just acknowledge that before you're tempted to demand more time and attention for your child, acknowledge those stories, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if this is a popular stance. I mean, we talk about it more with Kathy, obviously. But at the end of the day, my goal is a literate society, like a high-functioning society. And, you know, we do need to include everyone in our fits of passion in order for that to happen. The other thing that we both hope that you pull from our time with Kathy is simply this. If right now you are in a season where all of your time and energy is spent on advocating for the rights and the health of your own children, then that is worthy and admirable use of your mama bear.
Yes.
We have interviewed moms who have started nonprofits or who are writing books, but the reality is sometimes we need to pull back on the global issues of the day and focus on the ones right inside our own homes.
Can I get an amen?
Amen.
If you listen to the podcast and instead of being inspired, you feel like you're not doing enough, just take heart. If you're showing up for your family and friends and are making it through the day with grace and your humor intact, then good on you, Mama Bear. We salute you.
That's right. So let's dive in. Let's take a listen to one of the fiercest mama bears that we know, Kathy Engstrom.
Kathy Engstrom is a wife and a mom to three babes. She's an advocate for access to mental health and quality education for kids with various abilities. She is a truly extraordinary friend. So without further ado, please welcome my good friend Kathy to the Mama Bear Dares podcast.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me. I'm just thrilled to be here because I love you guys.
Well, we love you too. We're so, so excited you're here. As I just said, you're a mom to three. How about you just start by telling us a little about your journey to become a mom to Carver, Lily, and Zainabu?
Sure. My husband and I met, we were living in Minneapolis and got married there. And we're living at the time in basically the inner city and just... we're trying to do some neighborhood revitalization work, trying to fight against a lot of the white flight that had happened at that time. And we were involved in this amazing inner city church. And some of our friends had gone through the process of adoption. And when David and I started talking about, hey, we want to have kids, I think maybe adoption would be a great way to grow our family. So let's, you know, look into that. Let's pursue that. And then after we've kind of done that process and we'll see where we land, then we can try to have biological kids as well. And very quickly, we adopted our first son, Carver. And a couple years later, we went through the adoption process again and adopted our daughter, Lily. And at that time, I thought, okay, two kids, we are done. I have my hands full. This is plenty. We're good. So my husband and I never actually went down the route of having biological kids. And that's a choice that we are totally fine with. I realize that a lot of other people have struggled with infertility, and that's one of the ways that they wound up at adoption. Our story is just a little different. And then I think when Carver was 6 and Lily was 4, it dawned on me, and this is going to sound really stupid, I was not the best with the babies. Like, I loved my babies. I loved having babies, but when they were babies, it was super hard for me. And so when Lily was 4, I realized, oh my gosh, we don't have to have another baby. There are older kids waiting to be adopted as well. And so we started the process again, and we were open to really kind of anyone up to almost age 6, just wanting to keep sort of where our kids were. And we adopted our son Zanabu. He was almost 4, and he is from Ethiopia. So that is our family.
That is excellent, Kathy. We celebrate all kinds of moms on this podcast. So moms who have adopted, moms who have given birth themselves, moms who, you know, love their animals. And we've interviewed authors and we've interviewed advocates that are known nationally, but we've also honored moms that are creating ripples in slightly less noticeable, attention-grabbing, but equally important ways. So we are so excited for you to share how you, Kathy, have engaged your mama bear in perhaps the very most practical and traditional kind of way, and that's in your own home. And so many of us can relate to that, right? We don't have huge platforms, or we don't have the influence in exactly the right places with exactly the right people, but we just want to engage our mama bears with this sense of immediacy, like the ways that she can bare her claws in her home with her kids and her people. So one of the first ways that you had to test your instincts was with your oldest son, Carver, in school. So can you kind of talk about when you knew something larger was going on with Carver and that you would really have to engage that mama bear instinct?
Yeah. Before I share just my story about my kids, I want to let you guys know that I have spoken to my children and they have given me full disclosure to share their stories and talk about their struggles, because I don't want anyone to think I'm talking about them without their approval. They've given me full-on approval. Carver is 17 now. He's almost 18. Lily is 15. We've dialogued about this. And so it's just important for your listeners to know that we're super open and honest about their struggles. And my kids really want their stories to be shared if it would help someone else. And so that's one of the reasons I'm here. So with Carver, Carver was diagnosed with dyslexia and dysgraphia about the time he was in fourth grade. And it's funny because kindergarten, first grade, second grade, just no problems, no issues. He loves school, loved his friends, loved being there, really didn't see any struggles academically, no emotional frustration. But when he got to third grade, if you've had kids go through third grade before, there's kind of this vocabulary explosion that these kids are sort of introduced to. Up to that point, their spelling words are 3 letters long. They're kind of doing their sight words like there, you know, the difference between those words, just really getting the foundation before that next big reading jump. And in third grade, he just could not keep up. The words that were coming home on spelling tests, he's like, just was mumbo jumbo to him. He could see the word, read the word, but not remember 2 minutes later what it was or how it was spelled. So that was kind of our first instinct was, okay, well, we'll just see, you know, maybe it's the teacher, maybe he's just talking too much in class. And then when we got to fourth grade, we realized, yeah, we need some assessments here. We need to find out, is there something more going on? And that's when he was really given just not really a battery of tests, but some benchmark tests to see, can you do this, can you not? And for sure had the dyslexia and the dysgraphia kind of morphed by fourth grade, fifth grade, we could see the dysgraphia. So just to discuss those two, I know a lot of people hear the word dyslexia and they think, oh, you switch your B's and D's around or you can't see those. And dyslexia is it's really an umbrella term for a learning disability that alters the way your mind processes written material. So it can be word recognition. It could be just the whole process of decoding letters when you're reading and how they form a word, you know, phonics. It can be very broad. And then dysgraphia is a learning disability that affects your writing capacity. So you'll have difficulty with spelling. You'll have abysmal handwriting. You will have trouble putting thoughts on paper. So that process that goes on in your brain, when you think of a sentence, I mean, I just take for granted, I was an English major in college. And I mean, I can write a term paper, like, it's no big deal. I just think about what I want to write. It goes through my arm, out of my hands, you know, or onto the computer, boom, I can do it. And for Carver, there's just, in his brain, those thoughts cannot get put into a proper format and come out to communicate what he wants to say. So those are really his struggles. And it was really third and fourth grade that we said, I think there's something bigger going on.
Yeah. And I know with Carver, because I've met him and I'm quite partial to him, he's just, he's so engaging. He's like super social and funny and kind and warm and loving. I mean, it's got to be hard to kind of rectify like this Carver who outwardly is able to express himself so well and relate to you and that kind of thing, and then not do that on the paper, you know? Right. So I've got to believe that as a mom, that's kind of one of the harder things, is just like people see him and they're like, well, he's able to, you know, function at this level face to face. Is this really something that's going on? There's got to be a frustration there.
There is a frustration, and there, especially when people just think he's capable of more, because he does come across, he is so verbal, he's so extroverted, and he can talk about really any subject with great, you know, capacity. But in a school setting, in a traditional paper and pencil, or recall this and spew it back out to me, that just, his brain just kind of freezes up on that.
So Kathy, once you knew that he would require a little bit more help, how did you go about advocating on his behalf?
That is such a good question, because I had to do my work to learn what he needed before I could really advocate. I could say, hey, this is hard for my kid. How can we help him? Or he is really struggling with this. He cannot do this. What can we do? And so I had to sort of become an expert on my child, which you think you are, but until your child starts to not be able to fulfill the expectations that society says we all need to meet, you need to then say, okay, you are struggling in this area. I need to learn everything I can about this to help you. And it did help that, you know, there are educators in my family. And so I was not as intimidated maybe as some other people might be just to start that process. But it really comes as a parent. You do have to sort of educate yourself about the disability, find out what resources are available, just starting that communication process with the people at the school, and be the squeaky wheel. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think too, for people that maybe your kids have sailed through school and just haven't had these struggles, which is great. But for other people, they may not know sort of some of the resources that are out there. There's two things I want to bring to the table. The first is called a 504 plan. and the second is an IEP. And a 504 plan is actually a civil rights statute that was ruled on in 1973 that prohibits discrimination based on a disability. So kids with certain learning disabilities or even physical disabilities, like if your child breaks their arm and they're right-handed and they cannot write with their right hand for, say, 3 months, you can get a temporary 504 plan for that, you know, temporary disability to help that student be able to have all their needs met as adequately as possible. Mm-hmm. And then an IEP is an individualized education program. And so that's a plan written for a child who receives special education services, whether they're lifelong, you know, if you have a developmental disability that's going to affect you for your entire school career, you are most likely going to have an IEP. Or if you are behind at least 2 academic grades, you know, if you're a fifth grader and you're reading at a second grade level, you're going to want an IEP for that student. And that is just a very comprehensive plan to help that student stay on track, get back on track, and make sure their needs are being met. So one of the things we did with Carver was we got him a 504 plan, and that was just night and day made all the difference in his life and in our lives, because he could not do his work the way a traditional student does their work. And so he has accommodations in his school day that help meet his needs. A 504 plan follows him year to year. And so at the beginning of each year, we sit down with his guidance counselor and they just say, is this good? Do you need to change anything? Would you like us to add anything, accommodate him? Is this working? Is this not working? And we just go through an assessment, and Carver, you know, obviously speaks up for himself as well. And then that gets sent out to each of his teachers. And then it's his job to advocate for himself during the school year. Because sometimes, I mean, teachers are busy and they will forget. Mm-hmm. And so Carver has to be really good. This is such a good life skill for him to just start speaking up and say, hey, I need extra time on this assignment, or I really need to use the computer to finish this. I'm allowed extra time on this. And they're just wonderful. And they're like, absolutely, Carver, just get it to us when you can. And that has helped immensely.
One of the things that you and I have in common, I have a little babe with an IEP as well. So we've talked about this, and I was just so thankful that actually Leslie's husband is in the school system. And then my mom's was a guidance counselor. You know, I have all of these extended family members in the school system. So I knew as soon as I started seeing my little babe struggle a little bit, I knew how to go get Mama Bear on his behalf, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And your husband, David, also works in the school system. So what kind of advice would you give a listener out there who has found herself or himself in that same position, but maybe doesn't have a resource like a husband or family member? The schools it's a massive system. It feels so overwhelming. It did even for me, knowing how to kind of navigate it. But what advice would you give someone who feels just really overwhelmed at the process? Like how do they get these plans or these IEPs?
Right. I would say to that person, take a deep breath and remember that the school wants your child to succeed. The people in that school want your child to do the best that they can. They would rather that you speak up and say, hey, something's not right, something's not working, I need help, than to wait 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks while your child is getting even further behind and then say, well, I didn't know what to do and I thought you as the teacher would catch it. And just if you think something's wrong, you trust your gut and you jump in. And also remember that the school, the administrators, the teachers are doing the best they can. I mean, is every teacher perfect? No, we've had, you know, we've had great teachers and we've had some rough teachers too that, you know, kind of just grade us the wrong way. And we tell our kids, yeah, that's life. You know, you don't get to always be with people you love all the time. But overall, those staff people are there to make sure your child is getting a good education. So I would just remember that. And then also remember that these teachers are some of the most overworked people in our society. And if they've got a classroom of 30 kids and, you know, seven of them have special needs, it might not, you know, if your kid's flying under the radar because they're quiet or they're like Carver, they look happy. They're just happy to be there. Then it helps when the parents say, I think my kid needs something extra. And the teacher will go, I'm so glad you told me that because he looked like he was doing fine to me. So those teachers, those staff members, they want to hear from you. The people that they don't want to hear from is the parents whose kid is getting straight A's and that child gets a 98% on a science project and the parents emailing the teacher saying, why didn't you give my child a 100%? That's time out of their day that maybe they don't need that hassle. But those kids that need a little extra something, that's why the teacher's there. They want to help your child learn. So I would just encourage you to remember, this is your child. This is their education. The school is there to help you. Reach out.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's a really good point, Kathy, that you just made. And we talk a lot on the podcast about letting our mama bears cover not just our own kids, but actually help the children around us in our own, you know, schools and neighborhoods. And that one way that we can do that is by maybe not expecting perfection from our children who are functioning without an IEP. I think that sometimes, you know, we have these expectations for our children that are not really benefiting the good of the classroom or even the society as a whole. And one really easy way that we can kind of support teachers and support other, you know, kids out there is to maybe not take attention away from a teacher who's trying to reach, you know, a more challenging situation rather than just our sweet pea who's we just think needs the A+ instead of the A. It might not be a popular stance, but I completely agree with you.
I think you summed that up very well. It is hard. We all want our kids to do well in school. I mean, that's just, we love them. We want them to do well. We want them to succeed at life. But that is such a great reminder that when we're pulling the teacher's attention toward ourselves and our kid is doing absolutely fine, you are taking the school's time away from maybe the 10 other kids in the class who don't have anyone at home emailing the teacher at all. And the teacher is there to meet those kids' needs as well. It's a great reminder.
You need to learn when it's actually your ego and not your mama bear that's being poked. And, you know, the 98 out of 100 is probably more your ego than it is your mama bear. And we shouldn't get angry or act on the anger from the ego, but for sure the mama bear, if it's righteously angry, is okay to, you know, act on behalf of that. And so I think both of you are right. And I don't think that's controversial. I think it just takes some awareness. It takes some, you know, kind of self-reflection to see like, oh, is this just because I want him to have 100% or her to have 100%? And because then it reflects better on me. You know, I think it just takes self-reflection on that. But one of the beautiful parts about having kids with various abilities is just that, like, it's hard to have an ego. You know, because yeah, you realize they are their own people and it doesn't necessarily reflect on you at all. It just is this them. And it's kind of freeing, right?
It's very freeing. I mean, I go through those parent-teacher conferences in a whole different way than I think some other parents do. And that's fine. But Yeah, and then even myself, there are times when I do have to check my ego and say, is this about me or is this about really the well-being of my child? Does he really need me to step in on that or not? Do I just need to back off? I'm going to be just fine if I let that go. Yeah, even I still have to check myself.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Kathy, you have really been put in a position where you have to advocate for your kid and you have to show up at school. You're making more trips there than maybe an average parent would be. You're interacting with these teachers and administrators of this massive system. And so it probably doesn't feel so daunting anymore. Again, your husband's an administrator, and that's something I understand as well. But I wonder, I often will have friends, you know, approach Jake or myself. I used to be a classroom teacher in a life a long time ago. But people are intimidated sometimes by the system, by the individual teachers. So what are just some very general kind of things that you might advise people who want to create positive relationships and also get swift results from teachers, administrators, and really the system as a whole? Do you have any advice for the general listener?
Respect your teacher's office hours. Usually at the beginning of the year, they're going to tell you when they're available and when they're not. Make a note of that. Respect that. Constantly thank them. Thank them whether you feel that they deserve it or not. They are there every day managing a classroom of kids. Thank them. Thank them for their time. Be on their side because the sooner they feel like you're on their side, they're going to want to be on your side. I mean, that's just humanity. I would just say, just really check yourself in your own attitude and make sure you're not feeling like it's me against them, because I think that becomes divisive when you're dealing with an administration or staff members. You know, if you've got tutors in there, if you've got interventionists in there, whatever it might look like for you, just keep being a team, because when you are a team, you keep the focus on what does your child need, and it becomes less about, well, I don't know if this teacher is doing the right thing or not, or I don't know if I'm doing the right thing or not. Keep working together as a team to do the very best for your child. And that maybe that sounds easier said than done. You might feel uncomfortable. You might never get over that awkward feeling like, I'm so sorry to be bothering you again. I've had those emails like, hi, it's me again. I apologize. But I'm still confused about this, or Carver still is not getting, you know, fill in the blank. And how can we best help him get there? And when I respect their office hours, when I thank them for their hard work, like I said, we're on each other's side. So just remember, write it down on a piece of paper and stick it in front of you when you're making that 11th call of, you know, the first month of school, and say, I'm advocating for my child. My child needs me to do this. I am my child's voice. My child doesn't have a voice in this situation because they don't know how to speak up for themselves yet. You know, when they're 8 years old, that's your job. Whether you like it or not, you get to be the cheerleader. You get to be their advocate. And an advocate means cheerleader. It means fighter. It means get out there and get it done, because no one else is going to do it but you. So just give yourself a pep talk. Work yourself up and just know, really, the school's not the enemy. There might be people that you just don't get along with, but at the end of the day, be a team for your kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you're so right that I think people put a lot of pressure on schools in general, but teachers specifically, that they should be the ones to catch all of the things, to do all of that, and to, you know, but they will never, ever know your kids as well as you do. Just acknowledge that they are getting underpaid and work really extremely long hours. So anything you can do to not just help them, but to really just remind them too. You know, any teacher that I've had to do that is like, hey, thank you for reminding me and not making me feel bad about forgetting sometimes, you know, because again, they might have 30 kids, all of various needs and abilities. And so I think you're right. I think, you know, extending grace is the best thing you can do, because then grace is extended to you and then by nature, your child as well.
Mm-hmm. And I've certainly seen that played out with my kids, for sure.
This was probably one of the first times, right, your mama bear really had to kind of come out on behalf of your kid. And then around 4 years ago or so, you also started to notice something going on with your daughter, Lily. And one of the ways I'm most impressed by you is just how attentive and present of a mom you are. And you always have been. And I mean, we have to know our kids, right? Every mom I know knows her kids, but you're just really, really good about finding nuances in their personalities and things. And I remember you started to notice little things that didn't seem like kind of your typical Lily. So before we get into the specifics with Lily, I think I can speak on behalf of other listeners, but I sometimes wonder that I'm missing some of those small changes in behavior or subtle changes in mood. So as moms, other than trusting our instincts, how do we tune into our children? Like, really do that? How do you do that so well?
This is really hard because I have amazing 20/20 vision in hindsight, and I can look back and see all the mistakes I've made, the mistakes my kids have made, and see with great clarity what was going on. But when you're in the thick of it and you are just trying to get to the next nap time or just trying to get to dinner, you know, and you're in survival mode during those crazy busy days, it can be hard to be tuning into our kids. And I will also say that kids are great at hiding stuff from us. If you've got a kiddo that's a real people pleaser, they're not going to want to upset you and maybe tell you everything that's going on with them. Or if you've got a kid that's just kind of, their personality is more free-spirited, you can really attribute some things that are happening in their lives to them being really free-spirited. So I think what I have learned over the years is that I'm constantly encouraging my kids and being an open communicator with them and letting them know that they can always tell me anything, that I am always here for them. Because, yeah, as a mom, I do know them really well. And I do kind of see, you know, as we start talking more about Lily, I was able to pick up on some things that other people might not have. But when our kids are struggling with something and maybe don't want to share it with us, and they're maybe trying to just cope in life, and we might think they're doing great, we need to keep that door of communication open with them so that when they kind of reach their own limit of what they can handle, they can just come to us and say, Mom, I'm struggling with this, or this is too hard for me, or I can't do this anymore. And you have to have shown them and proven to them that you will say, I got this, or I hear you. It's okay. We'll do this together. Just do those in the little things, communicate with them, and just keep that door of communication open so that they want to tell you what's going on. And that's not, it's not going to solve every problem. I get that. But it's a way that can hopefully help you just continue to be on the same page with them.
Yeah, that's excellent advice. So when you were experiencing some of these things that you were noticing in your daughter, was she expressing things to you as well at the time? Or talk about what that was like when you were first starting to notice some changes and some nuances in Lily.
We did adopt Lily as a baby, and separation anxiety was something that has been with her whole life. And so, you know, when you drop your child off at the church nursery, or, you know, at the mom's day out, or leave her with grandma and she's really, really upset. Well, I was that way as a kid. And so at first that just seemed normal. But then as time went on, it just became where, I don't know if it should be this hard anymore. I wonder if this is always going to be this hard for her. You know, that was one thing. she had really strong emotions, just kind of reacting to things in a way that were excessive given the situation. And that was a pattern that I didn't notice it at first, but when she was six, when she was seven, and I thought, okay, you know, this is the fifth time we've had the conversation about sharing or whatever it might be. And she's still really struggling emotionally with this. She was a terrible sleeper, always has been a terrible sleeper. And I'm not trying to scare people. Like, if a child doesn't sleep well, oh my gosh, wait to see what's in store for you. I'm looking back at some of these things that I go, yeah, they all kind of go together. And for Lily, when she was in fourth grade, she had held it together really well at school up until fourth grade. And then she's just really a really hypersensitive kid. So if there was any teacher criticism, that just affected her in a way that was so devastating compared to other kids. Like if a teacher said, oh, could you redo this assignment because we changed the instructions, you know, another kid would be like, oh, okay. And for Lily, I mean, she could not cope. It was like she had been just shot down in front of the whole classroom, and she was embarrassed and horrified. And so there's a little bit of perfectionism going on there, and then not being able to handle just day-to-day instruction in a way that other kids could and function. For her, it was just too much. So by fifth grade, she had started school and made it through the first month. It was a little rocky. And then basically the best way to describe her fifth grade year was that life just blew up in our family. And she basically imploded and could not go to school at all. And I just remember so many mornings, hours, you know, of her crying, of me pleading with her, you know, let's just get in the car. Let's just get your backpack on and just try to get in the car. Let's just get your backpack on. And we finally had to pull her from school and do a combination of homeschool, online school, just to sort of limp through the year while we tried to figure out what the heck was going on with her. And that continued through sixth grade, through seventh grade. It has been a really rough journey. And so to sort of share what we have with Lily is that she has severe depression and anxiety disorder. And because she's also adopted, there is also an attachment disorder there. And so I kind of use broad terms because doctors are really hesitant to give strong diagnoses to kids, especially under the age of 10, but even under the age of 18, because your mind is still developing and growing. Life is still changing. There's a lot that can happen. Then you go through puberty and your hormones and blah. So doctors, you know, in her treatment, they say, yes, she has this. We don't know exactly where she's going to land, but we've had some pretty big words thrown around for her. And it has been a scary, overwhelming, sad, crazy journey that just landed in our laps that I would say we were completely unprepared for. So when you ask me if I look back, did I see anything? Well, yeah, but nobody sees this coming. When you have a family, you know, everybody wants their kids to be happy and healthy, and you just don't prepare yourself for the reality of mental health issues, mood disorders, unless it's genetically running in your family and you've grown up with it yourself. You might be a little more in tune. I was completely blindsided.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we said that you are really in tune to your kids and you did notice some of this in hindsight, but you were, I remember when you were first kind of faced with some of the terms they were throwing out and you're just like, I just can't believe this is our reality, because you notice little things, but these are, like you said, some of the terms are just really overwhelming. And what does this mean for her now? What does this mean for her in the future? So how did you go about advocating for her mental health?
So then there's the whole advocating for her at school again, and we can, you know, talk about that a little bit. It's going to mirror what we did for Carver, but I had to go through a huge grieving process before I was a good advocate for her. I kind of sucked at advocating for her at the beginning because I was trying so hard to hold on to the old Lily. I was trying with all my might to just cling to, let's just get her back to the way she was. Let's just get her to happy again. Let's do everything we can to find out what's wrong. Let's fix it. And then let's get back to our old life the way it was when everything was much better. And months and months went by and that wasn't happening. And she really floundered. And I just wasn't at a place where I could advocate yet because I was grieving. And so I just want to speak to all the moms out there. If your child has just maybe a mild learning disability, or your child has just been diagnosed with schizophrenia, you are allowed to grieve. You are allowed to let yourself go through a very deep grieving process because life now is very different for your child. Life is going to be hard for your child. The rest of life will pass your child by and your child will still be struggling. And it is okay to grieve. You have to kind of go through that process before I feel, at least for me, I had to kind of get on the other side of that grief before I became a better warrior for her, because I so longed for her to be the way she was. I just wasn't ready to admit that I needed to be the parent to this new version of Lily. We just wanted to get her back to the way she was. So after I did my grieving, and it was a couple years, because the doctor we were seeing at the time, you know, they're prescribing medicine for her and saying, well, maybe this will work. And I'll say with mental illness, we have come a long way and I'm so grateful for that. But it's like when you're rebooting your computer and you're watching that little bar fill up and it's like 35%, you know, and you're waiting for it to get to 100. Well, that's, I feel like, where we are in mental health treatment in this country. We're at like 25%, and it is so painfully slow for those of us that are in the midst of it. Because, okay, so with Lily, she has severe depression and anxiety, and they treat it like, okay, you have cancer. We don't know what kind of cancer you have, so we're just going to give you cancer treatment. We're going to start with lung cancer treatment and see if that works. I mean, we are so far beyond that in the world of cancer. We don't do that anymore. But that's what it's like with mental health. And it's, they say to her, you have depression and anxiety. We don't know exactly what medicine's going to work for you, so we're going to start with this one because most people respond to this. Great. So the first medicine, you try it for 6 weeks. You wait out those 6 weeks, and then you go back to the doctor and say, how are you feeling? Do you feel like this medication's helping or not? No? Okay, well, then let's up the dose. And so you wait 4 more weeks, and then if that dose is successful, great, we'll keep you there for a while. If it's not successful, let's try to up it one more time, wait 4 more weeks, then we'll switch you to a new medicine. So a whole year could go by, and you've tried 4 medicines and none of them have worked. And that is what we found with Lily. She's kind of medication resistant. So it just makes it harder. It's this big jigsaw puzzle. And sometimes 2 medications work really well together. And you have to go on one and wait 8 weeks to make sure, you know, your body doesn't reject it or have some crazy reaction to it. And then you add on the second to see if that one would help. So it is this long, laborious process of trying to get help. And meanwhile, her classmates moved on from 5th grade to 6th grade, 6th grade to 7th grade, and they're doing fine and they're great. And we are stuck back at, can you get out of bed this morning? Can you eat? Can you get dressed? That is kind of what our reality was for those really long days for that season. So I have to just keep encouraging parents out there to say, it's not a quick fix. It's not going to be easy, and it's really, really long.
Yeah, I had no idea, Kathy. Honestly, this is, you're kind of peeling open this whole new world and new experience, and I really appreciate your honesty, and I feel for you. And I wonder, how do you, as a parent, how do you come out of these intense circumstances of caring for one of the people? I mean, your daughter, you know, how are you okay?
Well, I cry a lot. I let go of a lot of things that used to matter that don't. And then I have finally had to learn to start being more honest with people, because, you know, if Lily had diabetes, or if Lily had cancer, or if Lily had a severe illness that was so visible on the outside, I know that it would be easier for people to help us. And I totally get that. I completely understand that. She has a very invisible disease, and it also causes her to act not so great in public sometimes. I mean, we have been in public places where she has just said, I can't do this anymore. I have to leave. I have to leave right now. And we're in the middle of my oldest son's orchestra award ceremony, and she's going, I have to get out of here right now. I'm having a panic attack or whatever. And we will get up in the middle, and we're sitting in like the third row, and, you know, just an example like that. And we have one of us leaves with her, drives her home. My husband and I are constantly doing, okay, I'll go here with this one, I'll stay back with Lily. And so the way sometimes that she has broken down or cried or really just completely freaked out in public places is kind of off-putting to some people. And when she was younger, it was a lot of, we would get looks like, you need to control your child, or what, just get your child to school. Come on, how hard can this be? Where they really just did not understand the battle that we were fighting and the struggle that Lily was having. I mean, I make this kind of sound all about me when it's really all about Lily. I mean, to walk in her shoes is just excruciating. And so because what she deals with in her illness is so invisible in her head and comes out in ways that are just not socially acceptable, we've been kind of fighting this by ourselves for a long time. I mean, it's easy with my long distance friends to send them texts, and like I can tell Tessie, oh my gosh, today was just horrible and this is so hard and how am I going to do this, versus the other moms that I see at school and they ask me, how are you guys? Like, okay, do you want to know? Do you really want to know how we're doing? Do you want to know what just happened at my house, that my child is suicidal today? Do you want to know that? No, you kind of really don't. I mean, if I'm honest, you probably don't want to hear that from me. And so I have to put on a smile and say, we're doing okay. What's going on with you guys? And just shift all that attention back to everybody else. And so I lived in silence for a long time, and we hid it very well. But in the last year, I was noticing in myself that I was becoming way too bitter. I was very bitter about other people and the successes that their children were having. And I was noticing, I can't even be happy for their child and for them because I'm so bitter. And I just had to start sharing with people, not everybody, but just opening the door, just cracking the door open a little bit and saying, okay, this is what our life is like. And then, of course, the moment I do that, everybody has a story. Oh my gosh, I totally understand. When I was growing up, I struggled with OCD. Or when I was growing up, my dad, you know, had generalized anxiety disorder. Or in our family, my uncle has the, you know, it's so true. It is very hard to find someone now that doesn't have some sort of mental illness somewhere in their family. And if they don't, they're very fortunate. But usually we know somebody or know of someone that is struggling. And so when I opened that crack, I found a lot of empathy and a lot of hope and a lot of love. And so I really wish I could go back a couple years and just say, I should have been more honest and not struggled so much in silence. It's still hard. I mean, I still don't think the majority of people really know what it's like at our house, but more do. And Lily is better right now. We're in a season where she's doing better. And so I can kind of, you know, ride that road of, hey, we're in a better place right now. Let me share with you what it's been like. But right now it's okay. So give yourself permission to cry. Give yourself permission to not make fabulous dinners every night. Give yourself permission to let your other kids watch TV much longer than you otherwise would. Give yourself permission to let a few people into your life, to let them help you. I'm terrible at asking for help. I don't know why.
Yes, but, you are.
I know. But when I do, I'm like, well, duh, all these people love me and they want to help me. Please, please don't be afraid to ask for help.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's such a cliche thing, right? But like, the whole airplane thing. And when we were all watching you go through this, it felt like Kathy's not putting on her mask. Kathy is just trying to put on Lily's mask first. And Kathy is dying over there, you know, and we live so far away, but it's true. I think that's hard. You know, when you say you were suffering in silence, we saw that, you know, even those of us who you had told that you were walking through some of this. I think part of it is you're introverted, you're quiet by nature anyway, but also you don't like asking for help. But also, if you feel like there's no way people understand because most people don't, then it feels like just another thing you have to do to try to explain what you're going through, you know? And exactly. So it's not that you're making this about you. We really wanted you on so that I think that is our nature, is just like sometimes as moms, we know we are strong. And so we act really, really, really strong and we take care of all of these people. And we think that that just comes with the job. But what we don't understand is that actually, you know, from the beginning of time, we've been doing this in a community. And that's when we're at our best, is when we really rely on our community to help us parent and to help us be, you know, supporters of our kids and each other's kids and things like that. And so I think, you know, what I hope people are hearing from this, especially if they have kids going through something similar, if they themselves are, is just that like, this is going to be so, 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 so hard, you know, both the logistics, like you talked about the logistics of getting mental health care for your daughter, but also the, you know, the spiritual and the physical and the emotional stuff for you, but you can do it. I mean, you're alive, Kathy, you know, and once in a while you let us help you, you know, and let your friends there and your family there help you too. And so I think that, you know, you're offering some hope for people too, even if you don't feel that.
I do hope so. Please learn from me. Mental health. If you have a child that's really struggling with a big mental health disorder, it's there. And so you have moments where you're like, whew, okay, today's a good day, but tomorrow might not be. And so you are not guaranteed anything. And I'm not trying to sound like a downer. I'm just saying that's kind of the reality of this disease. Like, you have stretches that are okay, and then you have stretches that are very hard. And it is so crucial for you in those really hard stretches when your child is suffering so much and you are mom and you want to do everything for them to make it better, that you still have to find a way to take care of yourself, to find one other person that's either going through the same thing or is willing, that you can be vulnerable with, that can give you just some clarity. And I also found it's totally, totally great to read People magazine at the doctor's office. Like, at one of her psychiatrist's office, there was like The New Yorker, The New York Times, like all these literary medical magazines. I'm like, screw this. Give me People magazine because I need to know absolutely nothing right now except drivel. Just give me drivel because I just need like a little mini break from life, and that's what I'm going to do.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
I want to add also to parents whose kid is not normal. And I use that word in quotes, okay? So let's put air quotes around the word normal.
Right.
Because we live in a society, especially if we're going to be talking about school and education, where the school system is really set up for the normal child, for the child that can walk in there and can sit at a desk all day, that's their brain works pretty good. They can tick off all the boxes, fill out the worksheets. And I'm not saying that those kids don't work hard. They do. They work hard and they get their stuff done. But you know that there are some kids that school just comes a little more easily to them. And mm-hmm. So if you are the parent or know someone or are caring for or just love somebody in your life, where they get to school and they are not really fitting into that box, I want you to take a deep breath and know that your kid is going to be okay. Your kid is amazing. Like, here's the benefit of having dyslexia. Carver cannot write for crap, and he knows that, and we laugh. Like, when he handwrites birthday cards for me, they are so precious to me because truly I'm the only person in the world that can read them. However, so school is hard for him. He is brilliant because when you have dyslexia or you have something maybe you're struggling with, there is another part of your mind or your life that excels. And so when it comes to kind of like that engineering spatial side for Carver, he's just, his mind is overcompensated and has grown really, really strong in those areas. And so he's not super great at math either. Unfortunately, his dyslexia does carry over to math, but I just have no concerns overall for him in life because he's friendly. He's kind. He loves to work hard on other stuff. There's so many other things he's interested in. He's amazing. And that's true for Lily too. My husband and I joke that Lily was born not really speaking the language of humans, but she speaks the language of animals. And she yes. is astounding. Like, she is so great with animals, and she'll probably grow up to be like a dog trainer and own 2 horses and, you know, just like get in that world of, or maybe she'll be a vet or a vet tech. It's just, your kid's going to be okay. Just because they did not receive all the awards at the 4th grade reading assembly, your child's going to be fine. And so don't let society tell you that your child is successful or not, especially social media. You find out what your kid is successful at and let that define them, because there is something that they are good at, and let them just thrive there. When I said I went through the grieving process with Lily, of she was so athletic. And still is. She's crazy athletic. But just team sports, can't do them. Super, like, just not in her arsenal right now, in her life. But she is so good at helping people. Like, she'll walk up to anyone in our neighborhood, and she was a dog walker. Like, she has no problem walking up to strangers and be like, hey, if you're ever out of town, I'll walk your dog. Let's take care of the dog. And she's like made a boatload of money taking care of the dog. And so I have to look at that and go, okay, what would society say is successful? That she's on club volleyball and traveling and doing all this great stuff. Is being a dog walker successful in society? Well, maybe not. But then I look at the flip side and say, she has these great skills where she puts herself out there. She's making money. She's not afraid to work hard. She's not afraid to do what she loves. She doesn't care what people think about her. And so isn't that just as successful?
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's kind of liberating then, right? To be considered a family that's not normal. Like, in some ways, we put so much pressure on ourselves to kind of keep up with the standard of whatever it might look like, you know, the matching clothes, shiny smiles, two clean cars. You know, there's nothing wrong with those things, but it's kind of freeing, again, to be on the other side. And it lets you sort of just show up as you are and be who you are. And I think as long as you're okay with that, it makes other people more okay with that. And so I appreciate you bringing that up and love the idea of being a parent and then kind of playing with those expectations of what normal really is.
Absolutely. I mean, I just don't stress about the same. I mean, we have stresses in our life, but I just don't stress about some of the other things that might seem really big to other people, but are just so small to me. Just not on my radar. It's totally okay. We're pretty laid back about a lot of other things in our life because some of our other concerns have been big, and it's just helped us put life in perspective.
And your kids is too. Your kids witness that. And that's kind of, you and I always laugh. Like, we are not the people who show up with clean clothes. These are not who we are. But if all of us show up, and then it is a major win. So you guys just appreciate that. This is all you need to appreciate about us.
It's so true. If we are all in the same place at the same time and everybody is like having a good day, total win for our
family. Well, yeah. And you know, you mentioned it earlier about just like being at Carver's Orchestra Awards and then having to leave with Lily. And it got me thinking about, we see this time and again, right? When one of our kids has special needs or is going through something, it can often affect our other children in the home. And it makes it kind of hard on them, right? And so how do you balance that? Like, how do you keep your relationship with Carver and Zainabu going well when Lily is kind of at her kind of darkest moments? Or what advice can you give to other mamas out there?
Yeah, it's having three kids and having one of them need so much of me does mean that I have less for the others. And so I have to be extremely intentional about making sure that everybody's needs are met and letting them know I'm still here. I'm still mom. The biggest thing that I have to watch out for, if Lily's having a really bad time, because sometimes when you're depressed and anxious, you just don't get along well with other people. And so she can be hard to be around, especially if you're just, you know, a brother in general. I mean, that's, you know, I have three teenagers, and sometimes, you know, even on the best days, they're like, I don't really feel like being around you. But when Lily's having a hard time, it can be tough. So I have to make sure that my boys know they are not responsible for my happiness or Lily's happiness. So I kind of pick up when my youngest, when Zainabu, who wants, you know, is the youngest and wants to make everyone happy, I can tell when he's feeling like maybe he's picking up on the fact that I'm sad too, and he's trying to make me happy. And I have to really just say, hey, it's okay. I'm okay. You're okay. You're not in charge of my happiness. I'm here, but you don't have to pretend that you're not hurting either. So, because sometimes he will try to, he'll just kind of, if he's had a rough day, he'll just kind of shrug his shoulders. I go, hey, I need to hear about your day. You don't have to protect me. That's my job. I'm here to be here for you too. And that's worked really well. I'm very quick to change plans, set aside plans, not have dinner made on time. If the kids are, if Lily's doing great, then I go, Carver, let's go, you and me. Let's go, what do you feel like doing? And I will intentionally spend time with him. Same with Z. What do you want to do right now? Let's go do something fun. And so you have to be a little spontaneous, but just carve out that time for them. And then the other thing I do is I'm very honest with them. I mean, we've had really good talks with them about Lily's illness, what it looks like, and that their lives are hard. It's hard living in this house sometimes. It's unfair living in this house sometimes because Lily does get a lot of, sometimes things just go her way. You know, if something's going to be too overwhelming for her, too hard for her, then we don't do it because we'd rather do something together as a family, something that she can handle than something that we are split up a lot. And so we try to do things together as a family. And so I have to say that I'm sorry that we couldn't do this because it was too hard for Lily. And I'm honest with them and they're honest with me. And for the most part, they're super understanding. But then you do have to set aside that time just to make sure that they aren't always getting the short end of the stick. And so, yeah, I have probably had a little too much ice cream with them. I'm not saying you should have your problems with food, but ice cream does cover a multitude of sore feelings.
Great.
But just always checking in with them. Again, keeping those lines of communication open, as I mentioned before, letting them know they can tell me anything. And it's okay. I want to hear their frustrations. Their frustrations are just as valid as Lily's frustrations. And that's been a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You are so strong. Those of us who have witnessed you doing this and kind of navigating all of this without really knowing how to, you know, learning as you go, are just in awe of you. But sometimes we feel like we are not great at it. So if you could give advice to, if there are listeners out there who have friends going through something similar, how can we be good friends?
I think it's always going to be hard because you want to help. You see someone that's hurting and you just, all you want to do is help. But because sometimes mental illness can be so private, like there were times when I really didn't know if I could share everything about Lily because I didn't want people to look at Lily in that sad, pathetic way I knew they would if I told them everything she was struggling with. So sometimes when I was not asking for help, it was because I was also protecting her privacy. Mm-hmm. And so it's okay if you don't know all the details of what your friend is struggling with, because maybe they're just not ready to share. But my goodness, a meal always does wonders. Offering to drive their other kids' places. Always telling your friends at the last minute, it's okay if you have to cancel. Like that was one thing that was really hard for me. People would want to get together with us. And at the last minute, Lily just could not leave our house. You know, her anxiety got so bad at one point, she was almost really confined to the house. And it was so hard to say yes to social plans, knowing that, you know, at the last minute, we're going to have to cancel. I know we are. Should I even say yes to this? Mm-hmm. So if you suspect something like this is going on with a friend's child, tell them. We're going to make plans, and it doesn't matter if I have a 7-course dinner prepared and you have to cancel at the last minute. Please just try. Just try to come. I don't care. I don't care if you're here for 10 minutes and then something happens, your kid falls apart and you've got to leave. That's okay. I just want to see you. And it's better for me to see you for 10 minutes than to not see you at all. Or if you know that your friend is really struggling, helping their kids deal with homework, with all the other things on their plate, just offer whatever you can and just send them a note in the mail. Just tell them you're thinking about them. It can be something little like that to something where you just stage an intervention and say, what is going on? I want to help you. Just still with the idea of protecting the privacy of the kiddo that may be really going through stuff they're not ready to share with.
Yeah, that's, I think, really great advice. And again, mental illness can be one of those things that you're right. Like we're sometimes not sure how to talk about it, or we aren't sure what we can ask if we see someone else dealing with it themselves or with their children. And so it can be
a really kind of delicate situation. So I think it's really important for myself and for our listeners to hear it kind of in your voice. I just, again, really appreciate you sharing your experience dealing with mental illness and with struggle with your children. It's a big deal. Parenting is so exhausting, no matter where you're at in life. But parenting kids who are walking through those really tough things, whether they're psychologically or emotionally or spiritually and physically, whatever it is, I just kudos to you, because I just know it's even more exhausting. So, Kathy, as you move about this world as a woman and as a mom and as a mom to some kids with some really exceptional ways of being, what do you do for your other self?
Well, Leslie, I'm going to take you to task for this. I do not jog. I run. So you're not allowed to say the word jog ever again. Because
do I say jog?
You do.
Well, thank you for that. Because you know what? I run.
You are a runner.
And I am a runner.
And I am a runner. So I run. I run a lot. And I have found that if I get up in the morning, I usually run early in the morning, and I just get it done, and then the whole entire day goes to crap, I can go to bed that night going, well, I still ran 5 miles this morning. So there's like, I'm proud of myself. It is so good for my brain. It's so good for my body. I love to run, and it's just a great, great way for me to just sometimes have some alone time, but also just feel like I'm doing something really good. Mm. And then this is embarrassing to admit, and I can't even believe I'm going to say this, but one of the things that makes me feel really good is to clean. And
I had no idea what to expect there, and it was for sure not cleaning.
I know, it's so stupid. No. But sometimes when your whole life is chaotic, it is so therapeutic to like open your dresser drawers and just fold shirts, because really there's not a whole lot that I have. I mean, none of us have a lot of control over anything in it. Maybe I think I pretend I do, but sometimes when things are chaotic, it just feels really good to like clean a closet or clean under my bed. And my husband is probably laughing at me right now. He's like, yeah, you do that. Really? You do it a lot, honey. But I do. It just... I don't know. It just makes me feel good. I'm sorry.
I love it. Don't apologize for that. I kind of get that. Like when you're talking about that sort of need for control, there's nothing better than an organized sock drawer. I mean, really.
That is so true.
So, ladies, I totally disagree with that.
I know you do. And then I love to bake. I'm not so great at the cooking, like that's just kind of a means to an end, but I love baking. So if I'm, just needing to fill some time, not that I have a lot of extra of that, or if I feel like making something yummy, that just makes me feel great.
Fantastic.
And I want to end on a happy note. I don't want anyone to leave this podcast thinking, oh, poor Kathy, that sounds horrible. Glad I'm not her. We have a great family. We have a great family, and I have three amazing kids. I have the blessing of being an advocate that is something I never would have signed up for, because, yes, Tessie, I suck at asking for help, and I'm such an introvert, as you know. And I'm like, oh, I have to do that. I have to make that call. Yeah, I do. I do. So it's pushed me out of my comfort zone. It's made me a better person. I am now like a magnet to other families that are struggling with some similar stuff. I can just see it on their faces, or I can just tell by their kids that maybe something's not going great in their school year. And I've met so many amazing people. I've met so many amazing teachers. We have been blessed to have these circumstances because it's made us better. And it's opened my eyes that I'm also not the only one struggling. Everybody struggles with something. Mine just might look a little different from yours. So if if this is you, if I'm speaking to you and you have something similar going on in your life, then please be encouraged. Do not leave this podcast feeling like this is going to be terrible. Be encouraged, because a lot of great things await you. And I want to leave with that message.
I just really admire your strength, I guess, and just like your know-how, because I'm just like, how is she doing all of this? You know, not that you put on this like face of just like everything's easy and everything, you know, but like it's an amazing thing. And I just think it speaks to your character of just the fact that you can take care of you and your family and also have leftover in your reserves to take care of your friends and these people that are struggling that you are willing to help. So you're amazing. I mean, I knew you were going to be amazing, but
I don't feel amazing. My kids watch a lot of TV. Thank you.
Mama Bears, today we of course leave you with a dare. We dare you to embrace the season you are in. If you are in a rhythm where all of your kids are doing well emotionally and physically, and you have some extra mama bear energy to give, now might be the time to volunteer for your favorite organization or set up a fundraising event to raise money to buy kiddos backpacks full of school supplies. But if that doesn't describe you, if one or more of your babes are working through something, whether it be big or small, then just release the pressure to do anything more than be all in with your family. In this podcast, we do interview women doing extraordinary things, but even they will admit that those seasons are just not sustainable. As moms, we have to understand that even our energy is finite and that it's absolutely okay to pull back a bit and focus it all on the family when our loved ones are needing it the most. And if you're in that beautiful season where things are running smoothly, pay attention. Be open to the world and to your friends and neighbors. Notice if you can be used to provide support for women like Kathy who are maybe quiet about their needs but would still appreciate a home-cooked meal delivered or a bottle of wine and a fuzzy blanket. Be alive to the hum of your family and your community. Stay woke, Mama Bears, and start to evaluate where your gifts can be used to cover those around you. Or use that wine and fuzzy blanket on yourself. Both causes are equally admirable. We can do hard things for ourselves, for our family, and for our world. We need only embrace the season we are in and use whatever energy we have to push the tides of love and compassion as far out as possible.
Oh, that gave me goosebumps. I think that's a really important dare, sister. So awesome job on that. Mama Bears, tell us what you thought of Kathy's interview. Were you inspired? Do you love her now as much as we do? Let us know. We are on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. You can always check out our website at mamabeardarespodcast.com. We'll actually link a lot of helpful articles and resources that Kathy has shared with us. So dive into the show notes there if you'd like to learn more. We are taking the show on the road, Tessie. We're looking for Mama Bears in the St. Louis and Chicago area. So if you know of anyone who lives there, if you live there yourself and you've got a story to share, which I know you do, let us know. Email us at mamabeardares@gmail.com. And don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. It makes a huge difference in the number of mama bears that we are able to reach each week. And we want to keep the conversation going. So we're thankful that you're here. Tell your friends.
Tell your friends. Tell your wife. Tell your husband. Friends.
Tell your mom.
That's right. Have a great week, mama bears.
Have a great week.